Welcome to the Cat Clayton Mysteries. Do you enjoy mystery novels? Are you in the mood for some small town shenanigans? Or maybe you're on a road trip and looking for something to listen to. Either way, I am glad that you've tuned in. Think Murder, She Wrote, mixed with Legally Blonde in small town Texas. So, sharpen those sleuthing skills and let's solve some mysteries. Try to say that 5 times real fast. Oh, and a disclaimer. Like the dog in the books, my chihuahua, Cuff, likes to be heard. And since he sits in my lap while I record, you may hear occasional puppy whining, a yip, or other doggy noises. Now, get cozy and let me tell you a few stories. Last week, we ended Chapter 6 with Steely and Cuff returning from doing a bit of sleuthing, only to discover the back door of the shop cracked open. Did someone break in again? Let's find out. How to Leash a Thief, a Steely and Cuff Mystery, Book 1, Chapter 7. Glancing around the empty parking lot, I approached the door with caution. There didn't seem to be anyone lurking, but I couldn't ignore the nagging fear creeping up my spine. I felt as if 1,000 pairs of eyes spied on me from the dark corners of the back alley. As I pushed the door open, stillness greeted me. Despite the outside temperature hovering near 100 degrees, I shivered. The first thing I noticed inside was the door to the vacant upstairs apartment was ajar. As I entered the building, I peered up the stairwell. "Hello?" My voice echoed. Cuff rushed past my legs, hopping up the stairs like a rabbit.
"You stay here, Chiquita!"
Terror gripped its claws around my throat as I stood in the stairwell entry. This was like one of those cheap horror flicks, where the obvious lead actress walks right into the killer's trap. I panicked.
"Cuff, get down here!"
"Shh, Chiquita,"
his thought drifted from somewhere upstairs. Something crashed above.
"Cuff, are you okay?"
"Yes, Chiquita, all good up here."
A few seconds later, he appeared at the top of the stairwell. His bright amber eyes glowed in the fading sunlight.
"There was definitely someone up here, but now they are gone."
He trotted down the steps, his tail end twisting to the side with each hop.
"Let me go investigate the rest of the shop first, Chiquita."
With caution, Cuff padded down the shadowy hallway. I flipped on the lights. Nothing bad ever happens with the light on. Toenails click-clacking against the floor, Cuff peeked in each doorway, surveying all the rooms. He rounded the corner, disappearing into my office. I crept in his direction. Dread snaked up one arm and down the other, causing the hair on the back of my neck to prickle. I flipped on the overhead light and peeked inside the office. Nothing seemed disturbed, but I still couldn't shake the uneasy feeling. Someone had definitely been in here. From the middle of the room, Cuff lifted his head high, his nose testing the air.
"Wait here."
"What is it, little buddy?" He bolted out of the office door and headed toward the front lobby. A second later, he yelped, causing me to jump out of my skin.
"Oh, Chiquita."
I peeked out my office door.
"What's wrong?"
He didn't answer.
"Cuff, if you don't answer me, I'm fixing to..."
"Don't come in here. Call for help."
Who does he think he's talking to? Someone who follows orders? I made a beeline to the front lobby, barreling around the corner. I froze mid-stride, suddenly wishing I would have listened to him.
"I told you so, Chiquita."
Cuff sat on his haunches in the middle of the floor, facing Mrs. Shermack. Her limp body sat propped up like a rag doll in one of the waiting room chairs, a dog leash around her throat. Her legs crossed, proper lady style.
Her manipulated hands gripped a Good Housekeeping magazine as if she were reading, but her eyes were empty, lifeless. A bloody hammer lay at the floor by her feet. My legs refused to move, my voice trapped inside my throat. I dropped to my knees, wincing from the pain of my double-skinned kneecaps. Mrs. Shermack's gaping, hollow eyes stared at me, and I recalled the magazine conversation from earlier today and immediately regretted any ill feelings I might have had for her. Cuff trotted over and put a paw on my arm.
Call the cops, Chiquita.
And like a robot, I dialed 911. It had been one heck of a day. Sitting on the couch in my office, I stroked Cuff's head. I couldn't erase the image of Mrs. Shermack's dead body from my mind. Cuff perched on my lap, his head resting against me. Am I being framed or warned? I wondered. My instincts told me it was more likely a warning, since anyone with a lick of sense would realize I wouldn't leave not one but two dead bodies inside my business.
Chiquita, the officer asked you a question.
Cuff whined, nudging my hand with his head. I'm sorry, what did you say? I sat there like a limp noodle, staring at nothing in particular. Officer Jackson cleared his throat. I said, can you go over the details one more time, starting after you left the burn site? He said, sitting on the corner of my desk. Dressed in nice-fitting Levi's and a tight navy blue t-shirt, he must have been off-duty. Of all the officers within the department, why did this guy have to show up? I've told you the story three times already. I don't see how once more will make a difference. I'm tired, and I want to go home, I said, sounding like a whiner. But I couldn't help myself.
The sooner you answer his questions, the sooner we can get out of here, Chiquita.
Sitting in my lap, Cuff hadn't left my side since we stumbled upon Mrs. Shermack's body. I gave Cuff a tight squeeze. You're right, little buddy. The officer spoke up. There were no signs of a struggle. So, my guess is that Mrs. Shermack was murdered somewhere else and they placed her body here as a warning. This is the point I tried making to you last night. I feared you'd get yourself into trouble or danger, he said. For the first time since I'd laid my eyes on Mrs. Shermack's lifeless body, everything came into focus. Jackson was right. I'd gotten myself into quite the fix. I glanced up. He stood in front of me in full cop mode, notepad in hand, muscular legs slightly spread, upper body at full attention, and his intense black eyes studied me. Well, that's my feeling, too. My voice cracked. He let out a weighted breath. We found a message inside the magazine warning you. I know this is difficult, but can you think of anything else? What about the shooter from this afternoon? We have very little to go on. I recalled the magazine propped in Mrs. Shermack's hands. Well, what did it say? I asked. Officer Jackson glanced down at his notepad. Then his dark eyes found mine, holding me hostage.
It said, quit snooping, or else.
My stomach lurched, and I sucked in a breath. Someone had murdered Mrs. Shermack for snooping. I set Cuff on the cushion, jumped up, and crossed the room. I dug around in the top drawer of my desk along the miscellaneous pens and pencils and whatnots, finally locating what I needed, my inhaler. I took one big puff.
Are you better?
Jackson asked from behind me. I nodded. Pushing away the thoughts of the killer's message, I walked over and sat back down on the sofa. I can't remember much else, more than I already told you. Have you questioned Mr. Peters? I am telling you, he knows something. I found one of his gum wrappers on the stairs. There's a chance that he saw who did it and is just too afraid to come forward.
Are you always like this?
Like what?
Like a dog with a bone.
Funny. Cuff barked.
Where is the bone, Chiquita?
I think your pooch agrees with me. Jackson shook his head. Anyway, about this evening, did you see anything or anyone in the parking lot when you and Daniel arrived back at the shop? Maybe someone driving away or a car parked that you didn't recognize?
No, I saw nothing except the back door. It was open when we returned.
That's it. I'm sorry.
What about the other homeless guy? You know, the one from this afternoon?
He had the opportunity, and he knew Samson, the victim from last night. Maybe they had an argument, and he hit him over the head with that banjo he carries. And since he knows I'm onto him, he killed Mrs. Shermack and left her body here to scare me.
Shaking his head, Jackson scribbled on his notepad.
The guy calls himself Banjo. I tracked him down earlier today. He and the first victim were good friends.
Well, what makes you so positive that he didn't do it? I asked.
I found him this afternoon in the park, and I asked him. I believe he's telling the truth. Look, I've got a hell of a lot of paperwork to do tonight before I wrap this up.
Well, it's not like he'll come right out and admit to it, I said.
I wasn't ready to check this banjo person off my list of suspects. At least not yet.
Wait, what about her dog? He's a schnauzer. Any sign of him?
In all the craziness, I'd forgotten about Ranger.
No, why?
Jackson looked bemused.
Well, we found this at the burn site, I said, digging the blue bow from my front pocket. We recognized it as the one that Daniel put on Ranger this morning after his groom, but there was no sign of the dog.
Interesting. Didn't you say that a dog was missing last night, too? Jackson asked.
I nodded.
Well, I'll add a missing dog to the report. Anything else?
He jotted the note down on his pad. Do you know if anyone called Nick? I wonder why he isn't here yet.
Something resembling pity flashed in Officer Jackson's eyes.
He's not coming.
What do you mean, he's not coming?
Jackson shrugged his shoulders.
I called him earlier. I let him know the situation and told him that you were pretty shaken. I informed him the location was secure.
He shifted his weight on his feet and shoved his notepad in the back pocket of his blue jeans.
He said to send you straight home when I finished with my questioning.
Nick would be here in a heartbeat if Jackson had called him.
Wouldn't he? You're lying. I don't believe that you called him.
Yes, you do, Chiquita. You know he's telling the truth. It's Nick that you should be angry with, not this guy.
Jackson sauntered to the doorway of my office, hesitating. He turned and we made eye contact.
For what it's worth, I'm sorry Nick didn't come.
He glanced out the door and down the hall.
It looks like they've still got some work to do out here. Do you have an extra key? I can stick around and lock up when they're done.
I remembered Daniel's key still on the counter out front. Earlier, we'd been in such a rush to go see the burn site, he'd forgotten it.
Yeah, there's one on the front counter. I would appreciate it.
Leaving these guys alone in my shop wasn't exactly what I wanted to do, but I really didn't have a choice.
Well, what about opening tomorrow? I really can't lose the business.
Let me speak to the chief. It might be a good idea to remain open and keep business as usual. But I need to clear it with the chief first. Unless you hear from me, open tomorrow. Come on, I'll walk you to your car, he said, his dark eyes softening.
I got it, thanks.
I stood, collected my things, and treaded down the hallway. Cuff trotted along beside me. When we drove out of the back lot, I noticed Jackson leaning out the back door watching us drive away. He was on his cell phone having what appeared to be a heated argument with someone. His facial expressions were fierce. I drove down the road, my mind numb. Something flashed out of the corner of my eye. The disappearing sun's reflection bounced off a sleek silver bumper. The black car. Could it be the same one we saw at the burn site? At the intersection ahead of me, it crept by slowly. It was a Buick. Silver swirls trailed down the sides of the car. Black tinted windows mocked me. The car halted, idling at the stop sign, a tad too long, as if someone
inside was watching me. Could this be the person, or the persons who killed Flora Shermack? Cuff yipped from the passenger seat beside me, shaking like a vibrating cell phone.
Maybe you should call the good officer.
It might not even be the same car, I said. I threw the car into first gear and turned onto Main Street. Let's follow it for a bit and see.
I don't think it's a smart move, Chiquita.
I continued my pursuit despite Cuff's warning. He jumped up, putting his two front paws on the dashboard, watching out the windshield.
Don't you think that tailing a murderer is out of our league?
Don't worry, he won't even see us, I said. Pulling in behind the Buick, I followed from a safe distance. I noted it was an 80s model Buick Regal, Grand National, with beyond legal tinted windows. Although I'm no expert, my pop had taken me to enough car shows during my teen years to at least be able to identify the make and approximate year model. I couldn't get a good read on the plates, though. I tailed him, winding down the streets of Buckleville, over the old bridge, and straight out of town. I lagged further behind since the traffic thinned as we progressed out of town.
I think he's trying to give you the slip.
Cuff stared out the windshield, his tail swishing back and forth. For someone who said that this was a bad idea, you sure are having some fun.
Well, if you can't beat 'em, join 'em.
In the middle of all the excitement, my cell phone rang in my purse. Without looking to see who it was, I pushed the answer button on my steering wheel and connected the call via Bluetooth. Hello?
Are you almost home?
Nick's voice came through the speakers. The Buick continued west on Farm to Market Road 102. Did this creep live out our way? If not, where the heck was he going?
Yes.
I swallowed hard, trying to keep my eyes on the road and not lose the car at the same time.
Well, I need to talk to you about what happened at your shop today, he said.
Okay.
You sound distracted.
We'll just talk when I get home. I'll be there shortly.
Bye, I said and disconnected the call. Right after I find out where this jerk is leading us, I put the pedal to the metal. The Buick's high speed nearly caused me to lose it, but I kept it in my sights. Even though the sun had slipped beyond the horizon, I could still see a good deal in the distance. Just as I was about to give up the chase, the Buick's taillights flashed. Our driveway was up ahead. The car slowed to a crawl. I slammed on my brakes about a mile behind it and waited. Cuff panted, perky paws up on the dashboard.
What's he doing?
Well, I don't know. The car door opened and the driver climbed out. The driver was definitely male, tall and slender, and dressed head to toe in ninja black, including a dark-colored ball cap.
Who is it?
I can't tell, I said, squinting through the windshield. The driver jogged to our mailbox and shoved something inside. He turned and glared down the road towards us before he jumped back in his car and sped off.
Oh, Chiquita, I think he saw us.
You think?
That is what I said.
I slumped in my seat, jaw slack and hands gripping the steering wheel. Cuff was right. He'd spotted us. My heart pounded inside my ribcage, my breathing erratic. I glanced up and out of my sunroof. Just breathe, nice and slow.
Chiquita, I told you it's a bad idea.
Without looking, I held up a hand at Cuff sitting in the passenger seat. I do not need to hear, I told you so. It's quite obvious. I forced my foot off the brakes, letting the car drift forward, and stepped on the gas. I turned into our drive and got out of the bug, heading for the mailbox. Mere minutes ago, the creep had stood in this exact spot. Pulling open the mailbox door, I felt a wave of nausea roll over through my insides. He'd left a tattered piece of paper on the stack of mail. I dashed back to the safety of my car, slammed the door, and read the note.
Did you like the little gift I left you earlier? Back off, or else. The messy handwriting scrawled on a torn piece of McDonald's to-go bag had a red smudge on it. Oh my God, is that blood? I held the note away, scrunching up my nose in disgust. Cuff, balancing on his hind legs, took one whiff and sat back down.
Nope, it's ketchup. And I am catching the distinct scent of a quarter pounder with cheese.
Oh, well, there isn't a McDonald's within 50 miles of Buckleville. And how do you know about McDonald's?
I am no stranger to the Golden Arches.
I leaned back against the headrest, letting the frigid blast of air from the vents turn my cheeks into ice cubes. I fumbled with the locket around my neck, opening and closing the latch. Open, close. Open, close. The threatening message played in my head on auto loop. It didn't take a brain surgeon to figure out that Mrs. Shermack had been killed for snooping, and the person who did it stashed her body in my shop to scare me. Even more alarming was the fact that the guy knew who I was and where I lived. With warning signs flashing around every corner, the average person would have probably run screaming for the hills. But me? Well, I've been accused of being a lot of things, but never of being average. The entire mess spurred my curiosity.
That curiosity is gonna cause you trouble.
Cuff, I really need to focus.
I am only trying to help you.
His tiny head drooped. I considered my options. I could keep this to myself, or I could go straight to Nick, show him the note, confess, and wipe my hands clean of the situation. Except, what about Virgil? I mumbled. Cuff's head snapped in my direction.
We have to find him, Chiquita, before something bad.
Don't say it, Cuff. I know. Everyone is so wrapped up with the murders and the bank robbery, no one seems the least bit concerned that the poor pup is missing.
I am concerned, Chiquita.
I know. Me too, little buddy. Tossing the threatening note down on the floorboard, I steered the bug slowly down our gravel driveway. It was time to face Nick.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Are you curious about what happens next? Be sure to hit subscribe and tune in next Tuesday to find out. If you're enjoying the Cat Clayton Mysteries podcast, I would appreciate if you would rate and review so that other listeners can discover the podcast as well. Thank you for listening. Until next week, stay happy and sleuth on, my friends.